Lebanon, we're going to hear Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah in his much anticipated speech, which is being given now. Let's take a listen to what is being said.
All of his family, may peace be upon all of his friends, and may peace be upon all of the prophets. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May peace be upon you all. At the beginning, I would like to welcome all of you. I welcome all the ladies and gentlemen, the brothers and sisters, to this blessed ceremony to commemorate the sixth annual anniversary for the July War, the godly or the holy victory, to commemorate all of the heroics and the victories and the values and the meanings and the great scenes which we all saw together years ago. I thank you for this huge turnout, and I pray to God that you, of course, put up with the weather and with me. And I hope that the brothers and sisters will put up with the weather, and we all remember the 33 days when we all put up with the rockets and the bombs and the fighting and the displacement and the tears and the pain and the dangerous challenges. My dear brothers and sisters, there are many subjects which I wanted to talk about. However, of course, the developments in the region, and especially the developments in Syria and what happened today, imposes and requires from us to focus part of this speech and part of this occasion to the regional situation, to focus on the regional situation. And so the main focus, the main plan for my speech, first of all, I want to speak a little about one of the facts of what happened in the July War, to uncover an Israeli failure, a unique Israeli failure and an Israeli trick, even a trick against the Israeli people, against the people of Zionist entity, and on the other hand, a unique achievement by the resistance in the July War. Of course, this achievement hasn't been spoken about before in previous years for reasons which I won't specify, but now I can speak about this achievement. The second point is what happened after the July War, and especially the regional situation, and third of all, I will speak about the Lebanese internal situation in some brief points or some quick points. On the sixth anniversary of the July War, the enemy and all of Israel, its politicians, its military men, its generals, its political parties, its people, its public opinion, it's all under shock, still suffering from a shock, the shock of a surprise defeat of the enemy in July 2006. Now, we in the resistance, we are not concerned from here or there. We're not concerned with those who believe that what happened is a defeat or not a defeat of the enemy. What concerns me is the Israelis. What do they say? Because my war is with the Israelis, because my confrontation, my struggle is with the Israelis. Of course, the others, what they say, do they recognize it as a victory or not? This is something else. We leave it to other analysis. However, the Israelis now on the sixth anniversary, the Israelis are holding, and still they are still holding conferences and discussions and interviews, and they are still writing articles. The high-ranking Israeli leaders participate in this, and former high-ranking Israeli officials are involved in this, and all of them in consensus, they all speak about defeat. Now, with respect to us, it's enough for us when the head of the Mossad, who was at that time the head of Mossad, Meir Dagan. Dagan in Israel is considered as one of the most important heads of the Mossad until now. Dagan said to his prime minister at that time, Ehud Olmert, he said that the war was a national catastrophe whereby Israel suffered a very severe blow. Or when another person whose name is Dan Meridor. Dan Meridor is the head of intelligence affairs in the current government of Netanyahu, and he was the head of the moderating or developing National Security Committee, which was there in July 2006 and continued with its efforts after July 2006, and it further developed the theory of national security. This person, Dan Meridor, he says, never has Israel seen such a thing. We have reached a very, very low level. Or Moshe Arens, the former defense minister, who is considered one of the strategic experts in Israel and who also lived through the previous wars, and now he is between 70 and 80 years old. He says that Israel suffered for the first time in its history a defeat. And he adds in his commentary, anyone who is doubtful that Israel suffered a defeat, because there are some who might say that Israel didn't suffer from a defeat, but there were some failures or some achievements were made. But he says, this person says, because it achieved some tactical achievements here or there, are there any wars whereby the defeated party isn't able to make certain blows? Of course, anyone can make some tactical achievements. However, the end result is that 250 rockets were launched towards Israel on the last day of the war. This is the result. So when the Israeli leaders and the strategic experts and the high-ranking military and security officials, when they speak about a defeat, when they speak about a severe blow, when they say they have reached a very low level, when they say they have never faced such a blow, and if I want to get their testimonies, I will take too long. So it's enough to refer to these people whom I spoke of, these Israeli officials. Now, regardless, they always look for achievements. Last year, I spoke about two achievements, and I said that these two achievements are silly, ridiculous achievements which don't deserve a war. However, they always, throughout the war and even after the war, until now, they are still making these tricks, and I will speak about this. And they are also speaking about a big, unique achievement and about an operation which occurred in the Second Lebanese War, as they call it. They called the July 2006 the Second Lebanese War. They called it the unique balance. I will explain what this operation means and what exactly happened, and then I'll go and begin with my second point. Now, from the Israelis' perspective, they launched an operation on the 14th of July. On Friday, the 14th of July, 2006, the Israeli cabinet, the security cabinet, met, and a proposal was made to the security cabinet. What was this proposal? This is called the unique balance, and I hope that you listen to this in detail, because this benefits us for the future, for future days. They came to this cabinet meeting and they said the following. We, over the past years, ever since 2000 until 2006, we have gathered precise, detailed information. We have gathered information, dangerous and very important information, and we know, the Israelis said, that we know all of the launching pads for Hezbollah's rockets, the Fajr 3 rockets and the Fajr 5 rockets. They specified and they even named the rockets, and they said that these rockets, and today we'll be very transparent, they said that these rockets are Iranian made. And the Israelis also said, the Israeli defense minister at that time said, that the places of the launching pads in the south are all specified, and we have launched an intelligence operation, and they started to speak about their intelligence activity, and the Israelis said that they were able to pinpoint the locations of these launching pads, and they also said we specified where they are, and over the past few years we have also held Air Force drills in order to practice targeting similar targets, and the Israeli Air Force is ready to carry out this operation. If you agree to this operation of a unique balance, this operation will break the back of Hezbollah and the resistance and will end the war. This is what the Israelis said. And the Israelis assumed that this operation would lead to astonishment and a big collapse in the leadership of Hezbollah and the resistance, and hence the war will end, and then Hezbollah will be incapable of launching any rockets, any medium-range or long-range rockets. Of course, they weren't speaking about Katyushas, which only have a 17 or 20 kilometer distance. They were speaking about medium range specifically, and also long range missiles. Long range in our calculations and their calculations. Now, the Israeli cabinet adopted and ratified and agreed to this operation. And after 1 hour of this decision, the Israeli warplanes, look at this readiness, the Israeli warplanes, and according to the Israeli sources, more than 40 Israeli warplanes, F-16s and F-15-1, 14 Israeli warplanes carried out this attack, in addition to the warplanes which were protecting them, and they struck, according to the Israelis, they struck more than 40 targets, and according to the Americans, they struck more than 50 targets. Now, during 34 minutes, the operation had been done and completed, and all of the targets which they had specified before, that they said they were launching pads for the Fajr 3 and Fajr 5 rockets, they said they destroyed all of these launching pads. And Dan Halutz, the Israeli Joint Chief of Staff at that time, called the Israeli Prime Minister at that time, Ehud Olmert, and told him that we have achieved victory and the war has ended. And if you remember, on the second day, Shimon Peres, who was the deputy prime minister, he said that Israel has achieved victory. And the secretary general of Hezbollah, Mr. X, has fled to Damascus. And I was still in southern Beirut, actually, at that time. Okay, this was the unique operation, the Operation Unique Balance. The Israeli leaders, the military leaders and the security officials after that, they spoke about security efforts, strong security efforts, professional security efforts, gathering information, dangerous operations in gathering intelligence, drills, maneuvers, huge amounts of money spent in order to make this achievement. And they compared this, look at what they compared it with. To know, to realize how much it depended on this first blow. They compared this operation to the 1967 war, when the Israeli Air Force bombed and struck the Egyptian Air Force. And they also compared it to the attacks which were launched by the Israeli warplanes against the anti-air rockets, the Syrian anti-aircraft rockets which were in Lebanon. They considered that it was of this importance, this operation. And so this continued until now. Until now, we haven't spoken about it. The Israelis still believe it until now. And Dan Halutz, at that time, he said that we destroyed between 70 and 80% of Hezbollah's rocket launching or missile capability. And they spoke highly about this step, and they spoke like they were very proud of themselves, and they still speak about it today. Now, I want to say what really happened, the truth. What really happened, and this is based on evidence, the truth is that the resistance, the wise resistance, which always has its eyes open, which is vigilant, and its security and military mind discovered and uncovered preemptively the Israeli intelligence activity regarding the launching pads of the mid-range and long-range missiles. And the resistance went along with them in their game, and it helped them, and they gathered the information which they wanted, the Israelis. How did they gather this information? That's something else. I don't want to uncover it. Anyway, they know how they gathered their information. Now, at one moment, this security mind, this very bright security mind of Imad Mughniyeh, the Marty Imad Mughniyeh, and his other brothers in the Islamic resistance, what was the idea? What was their idea? Okay, They have based all their calculations on this strike on Hezbollah's launching pads, because in the Israeli military mind and in the classical military mind, there is always a focus on the first strike. The Americans worked in this way in the Gulf and in the Gaza war. The Israelis worked in this way as well. When the war began, as you recall, they began with striking a gathering for the Palestinian police, which worked for the Gaza government, and hundreds of martyrs fell. This is called the first strike. In any future war, God forbid if it happens, the Israelis will focus and will plan and lay the foundations for the first strike. For this reason, we are speaking about the first strike which the Israelis tried to launch in July 2006. So let them continue with their first strike. However, without the Israelis feeling us, and here is a security achievement. The first security achievement is that the resistance knew preemptively and discovered preemptively that the Israelis were aware of the locations of the launching pads. The second achievement is that the resistance was able to take these launching pads away from these locations without the Israelis knowing or without the Israelis feeling. And the Israelis still considered and still thought that the launching pads of the mid-range and long-range missiles are in the same place. And actually, they were transferred to other places. The Israelis didn't know about this and they didn't feel anything. They didn't sense it. And when the Israelis took the decision to launch this operation and went ahead and bombed these locations, most of the locations which were bombed in this operation, they were empty. They were empty from any launching pads. What happened after that is that the launching pads were transported away from the locations and the fighting began. The fighting which continued for 33 days, and during this period, rockets were launched to the north and to Haifa and to beyond Haifa and to the mid-cities, and these rockets and missiles were also ready to strike Tel Aviv. This is what happened. The Operation Unique Balance, which the Israeli Air Force speaks proudly about and which the Israeli intelligence speaks proudly about, we call it today on the 6th anniversary, we call it the imaginary achievement, the unique failure, falling into the trap of the resistance and the war of tricks. And we all know regarding the future, and I hope, of course, evidence or testimonial to what I say is that 70 and 80% of Hezbollah's missile capability, which Halot said was destroyed, it was working. It was efficient. Until the last day, this capability was still working and it was able to continue to work for a long period. I don't remember if I said before, if we on that day, during those days, if we were satisfied with a specific number of missiles, it's not because our stockpile of missiles was small. It's not because we weren't capable of launching more missiles. No, we were capable on the battlefield to launch missiles, and we also had a high number of missiles. However, we were looking at the time. We were basing our missile launching on the assumption that the war will be long, will prolong. We didn't want the war to end because our rockets had ended or our missile stockpile had ended. So this is the operation, the first strike. Of course, on the second day when they uncovered the truth, or on the following day when they uncovered the truth and found out that a high number of missiles were launched, Halotz came back, entered into the cabinet meeting and said, unfortunately, it seemed that we have entered into a long operation which may continue for weeks. Shimon Peres, who said that the Israelis achieved victory in the war on the fourth day, and who said that I fled to Damascus, he swallowed his tongue and he still has his tongue swallowed. And with respect to the upcoming period, we realize we are following, and we know in Lebanon many people might be preoccupied with the details and with the problems of daily life, and that's their right. They might be preoccupied with the rows and the political arguments and the internal conflicts, the different internal conflicts. However, be sure have no doubt that with this Führer we have a resistance, and the leadership of the resistance and the commanders of the resistance and the men of the resistance, all of them, they are working day and night on this file, on this issue, the issue of the confrontation with the enemy and protecting the country. They are not preoccupied with anything else. Nothing keeps them away from this task. No screams from here nor from there. This resistance is following the Israelis day and night, monitoring them. And we know that the Israelis are working day and night to gather information regarding our launching pads, our weapons catches, the rooms where we plan our operations, our headquarters, and they are also planning for a first strike, just like they did in the previous wars. And first of all, I call on the Israelis, because the Israelis learn lessons and they study the mistakes and the failures. I call on the Israelis and I told them that your unique balance was imaginary. And we, in any future war, we know your first strike. We will have preemptive knowledge of your first strike, and we will anticipate your first strike, and we will surprise you when you want to launch your first strike. And here I would like to add to all my previous promises and pledges, in confronting any first Israeli strike in any war, we promise the Israelis with big surprises. Of course, we won't uncover today what these big surprises are, because then they won't be surprises. However, of course, I want all of you, I want the Lebanese people, the people of the region, I want you to be sure regarding the capabilities of resistance, the minds of resistance, the vigilance of resistance, and the capabilities of resistance. And you must know, and this is one of the most important and greatest results of the July war, you must know that we in Lebanon, we in the Arab world, we in the Islamic world, we in this region, we have minds and brains, and we have hearts, and we have wills, and we have determination, and we have the capability to plan and to order and to manage and to fight and to wage a war, and we have the capability to win in the end. And our fate is not as most of the Arab leaders or rulers and most of the Arab regimes and most of the Arab writers and most of the Arab media outlets. Most of them, they tried to convince us that our fate is defeat. And they tried to convince us that we are incapable, that we are failed people. We will fail. They said this is in our genes, failure. In the July war and after that in the Gaza war, the most important message for us and for our world and for our people, the most important message is that our fate is to achieve victory, not to be defeated. And as we brought about a great victory in the year 2000, and as we achieved victory in July 2006, yes, we are capable of achieving a greater victory in any time, at any time where we wage such a war or where we confront such a war. This is the message. This is the message which we must highlight on the 6th anniversary of the July war. Now, the war ended, and here I'll enter into point two, or the second point. The second point, which will be a prelude to the regional situation. The war ended. The Israelis then went ahead and began to evaluate, together with the Americans, they evaluated. And they drew the lessons together, not by themselves, the Israelis, with the Americans. And we entered a new phase. What was assumed, what they wanted in July 2006, the war on the resistance, to crush the resistance in Lebanon, was supposed to be a very important part of destroying the resistance axis in the region. There is a truth and reality which is called that the remaining part of the Arab and Islamic world, the remaining parties which still hold on to the Palestinian cause and which still hold on to Islamic and Christian sanctities and still hold on to Arab soil and the rights of the Palestinian people, they are represented by an axis from Iran to Syria to the resistance movements in Lebanon and Palestine. This is the truth. And most of the Arab regimes, they are on the other side. They are in the service of the Israeli-American project, the service of the settlement. And they are playing on time, depending on time, so that the Palestinians will surrender and give up and accept to whatever is given to them by Sharon or Olmert or Netanyahu. This is the truth. The Bush administration, as you recall, and the neoconservatives, they entered into the phase of controlling the region, practicing hegemony over the region. What was required is to destroy this axis. The first phase was to crush the resistance in Lebanon. If the resistance was crushed in Lebanon, the war wouldn't have ended. It would have begun and headed towards Syria, with the justification that Syria supported the resistance and provided the resistance with weapons and with missiles, etc., etc. The second part of the war after resistance in Lebanon would have been to overthrow the regime of Bashar Assad and to destroy Syria and to oblige Syria to bow down to the American-Israeli project, not to establish democracy or to bring about reforms in Syria, no, to make Syria bow down to the American-Israeli project. The American-Israeli project had its wings in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in some Gulf countries and throughout the region. However, the victory of the resistance in Lebanon, it overthrew the second part. It prevented the attack from being launched on Syria because at the last days, during the last days of a 33-day war, Israel was looking for a solution. Israel, believe me, Israel was looking for a solution. Ask the Arab delegation which was present in New York in the last days of the war, the Arab delegation which was negotiating. They told us, Israel in the last days, it abandoned all of its conditions. And in the last days, they took something just which is based on their, related to their morale, threatening the resistance. But what are their achievements? Shimon Peres himself, he says in a meeting with the Venograd Commission, he said that there was no other choice. This is the only thing we could do. This is the most which we could achieve. And I'd like to tell you today, on the sixth annual anniversary, if in Lebanon, if there would have been political national solidarity, if there was political national solidarity, and if some of the daggers in Lebanon, if some of the daggers were not in our backs, were not stabbing our backs in the last days of the political negotiations, we could have made big, big achievements on the Lebanese national level. However, there were some who were helping Israel on the political level in order for Israel to exit this crisis which it put itself in. Okay, so we overcome this period, and then they entered into another phase, the Gaza Strip. Gaza showed perseverance, and when this was shown, the perseverance in Gaza, the beginning was in Lebanon. The project for the new Middle East collapsed, and the Gaza war dealt the deadly blow to the project of the new Middle East. However, does this mean that the plans, the American-Israeli plans, have ended? No, there are alternatives. There are always alternatives. They're always looking for other options. They are pragmatic people. They don't have any problem. If you recall, during one of those years, previous years, I said that America isn't concerned if in the Arab world we have an Islamic party ruling or an Arab party ruling or a nationalist party or a left-wing party or a right-wing party. No, this doesn't concern the Americans. It's not important if you have a beard or if you don't have a beard or if you wear a tie or you don't wear a tie. What's most important for the Americans is your policy. The Americans are pragmatic people. Now in Afghanistan, they are looking day and night. They are looking for negotiations with Taliban which is fighting them in all the arenas at every hour. Now, if we look at the facts, they look for alternatives, other options. One of the realities which they saw, which they witnessed during the July 2006 war and after that war. First of all, in the Lebanese situation, they had a problem which is called Hezbollah. Let me be frank. The problem which is called Hezbollah. How do we solve this problem? Now, in light of the experience of the July war, there were some convictions. Some people became convinced. I don't have the time to read to you the testimonies. I hope Al Manar or other televisions can make an episode or a program about the testimonies made. However, they reached a conviction which says that the Air Force power cannot decide the results of the battle, cannot decide the battle. So they go ahead and launch airstrikes. They can destroy homes, bridges, roads. However, this doesn't decide the battle. Second of all, they also reached the conviction that the infantry operation or the land invasion, land operation is very dangerous. It's a big adventure. And a few days ago, Olmert, he took his breath once again and he spoke and he said, any land operation in Lebanon which extends beyond 3 kilometers is dumb, is stupid. Halotz agreed with him. Shimon Peres, he also says something which is deeper. And I'd like to tell you what he said exactly, because it's very important. And I hope, of course, Abu Hassan is here. Maybe you can take this document to the table of National Dialogue and distributed there. What does Shimon Peres say in the interrogations or the investigations of the Vinograd Commission? He said, because this war is happening from a distance, a war against terrorism, he's speaking about the rockets of the resistance which reached the Israeli cities. Listen very well. What does he say? He says, it's impossible. Shimon Peres, who from the very beginning of the Israeli entity exists, and he witnessed all of the wars, all of the fronts, he says, it's impossible by an F-16 warplane, which costs $100 million, it's impossible to hunt down every youth who is 16 years old. This is what they were doing in July 2016. July 2006, the F-16s, if we have thousands of youth, how many F-16s do they need? How many F-16s do they need? He says it's impossible by F-16 warplanes, which cost $100 million, to hunt down and follow every youth who is 16 years old. And in the end, he's speaking about the resistance fighters, in the end, they will possess anti-aircraft rockets, and they will even possess warplanes. And he also says, we cannot send a Merkava tank which costs $10 million and send it to every hole or to every trap. We are obliged to bring about new deterrence. All of these means don't benefit. This is what Peres says. A youth who is not defeated by an F-16 warplane, the youth who remain in South Lebanon for 33 days and who remain for 33 years and who remain forever without being shaken, this is the strategic, this is a real defense strategy, the correct defense strategy. What does he say? What does he say in his comments regarding Israel accepting Resolution 1701, Peres said Israel didn't have any other way to stop the war, and stopping the war was necessary. They direly wanted to stop the war, and this is the most which they could have achieved in the circumstances, or given the circumstances. Now, we don't have too much time, but I wanted to give you a quote from Dan Meridor regarding homeland security. He says that I participated in the war in Sinai and in wars in other places. However, Lebanon and Syria are a different story because of the geography. He speaks about this. However, let me conclude these testimonies with a summary. Let me conclude by referring to the former Israeli official Moshe Ya'alon, who is a minister in the Netanyahu government and who is also preparing to become a prime minister and who is presenting himself as a strategic expert. Also, I would like you to listen to what I say because it concerns the Lebanese people inside Lebanon, the Lebanese interior front, the Lebanese people who are raising their voices, and Lebanese people who don't know where they are. What does Moshe Ya'alon say? He says, it was clear to me that Hezbollah is a unique organization which will not be crushed with a military operation. It is also clear to me, he says, that there is no military solution in confronting the missiles of Hezbollah. For this reason, and this is a former Joint Chief of Staff, a strategic expert, he continues and he says, for this reason, I encouraged political efforts which lead in the end to disarming Hezbollah as a result of an internal Lebanese operation. What is he saying? He's saying there's no military solution. There's no military solution. If you want to solve the issue of Hezbollah's weapons, head towards internal Lebanon. Solve it internally in Lebanon by an internal political operation. As a result of internal Lebanese political efforts, you can address this issue. The problem with the Arabs, you know, the Israelis said that we Arabs, we don't read. And they still don't read, by the way. No, the Arabs don't read. Some of the Lebanese, they do what Israel wants. They say what Israel wants. Whether they know or not, they do this. And they might not know. Why? Because they don't read. And Moshe Ya'alon continues, he says, I have realized that there is no way to gobble up Hezbollah. Even Israel, when it looks towards Lebanon, it looks at Lebanon from a sectarian perspective. He says, Moshe Ya'alon says, I have realized that there is no way to eradicate Hezbollah from the hearts of the Shia in Lebanon. And I have also realized that there is no way to take away the threat of the Katyusha rockets. And so, because of this, I have proposed to work politically and militarily in order to contain Hezbollah and in order to, of course, further strengthen the chokehold and prevent any room for maneuver and for Hezbollah to be viewed in Lebanon as being illegitimate. That is required to lead the Lebanese people, to lead the Lebanese to the conviction and to make them see that Hezbollah is illegitimate and its weapons are illegitimate. This is the solution. This is the only solution which the Israelis have. Neither the July 2006 war, nor the August, nor November, nor December. No, nothing. There is no war which can defeat Hezbollah, this party of belief, this party of martyrdom and sacrifice. And so they rely on the internal situation. Now, here the Lebanese must be vigilant, they must awaken. Of course, with respect to this point, before I speak about the other part of this file regarding Syria, Iran, and the internal Lebanese situation, in this point I'd like to reassure you, because after that I will call for calm. I'd like to reassure you, some of our colleagues, some of our supporters, some of our friends, some of them are anxious and concerned. They might be worried because of some analysis. Nobody should be concerned. Rest assured, calm down, be sure, relax. A war like the July 2006 war, which could not harm the resistance or its will or its weapons or its men or its morale or its dignity, it will not be harmed by any people who curse here or there. And this resistance will not be nailed. That's enough. Anyway, when the Israelis and the Americans continued with their analysis, they reached the conclusion that they had another problem. They have the problem of Syria. There is a real problem which is called Syria. And not any Syria. Not the Syria of Abdel Halim Khaddam. That's no problem. That Syria is no problem. The Syria of Bashar al-Assad, that is a problem, yes. Now, look at Syria. They looked at Syria. They saw over the past years, there is an important development which occurred in Syria over the past years. And let's be frank here. Maybe the Syrians might not be able to speak in this way, but I'll speak and I'm responsible for what I say. First of all, A new military strategy began in Syria, a strategy which was worked on for the last 10 years, a clear strategic vision. This transformed Syria during the last 10 years into a real military power, which is capable of representing a strategic threat to Israel. With all meaning of the word, I mean what I say, I know what I'm saying. Especially on the level of missiles and further developing military manufacturing and also further developments in other arenas. There was a perspective in light of the developments and the capabilities and the available abilities. When the Syrian mind sat down and worked and renewed and looked at the weak points and the strong points and the available capabilities, they put together a new military strategy. And so Israel's view over the past few years, Israel's view towards Syria increased in pessimism and fear, because Syria had a military capability, especially with respect to missiles, a big, big capability. And now this missile capability is decisive. What does Hezbollah possess? What did Hezbollah possess in 2006? Did we have warplanes? No. We had missile power. And this missile power has no solution. So this needs a solution. And second of all, Syria. Some people speak about Syria as a place for transporting to the resistance, as a bridge for communication between Iran and the resistance, whether the resistance in Lebanon or in Palestine. Yes, this is true, but allow me tonight to say that Syria is more than this. Syria is not a bridge only. Syria is a real supporter for the resistance, not just politically and morally and from the popular, on the popular level, also on the military level as well. And I have two testimonies to this. The first is and here I am not uncovering a secret, because the Israelis announced this in the July war. The most important missiles which landed in Haifa and beyond Haifa and in the middle of Israel or occupied Palestine, the most important missiles were manufactured or made in Syria, Syrian made, which were given to the resistance in Lebanon. Syria wasn't an airport or a hub or a bridge for the resistance. No, Syria was a real supporter. A real supporter. It provided us with weapons which allowed us to stand in the July 2006 war. And I can tell you frankly, the most important weapons which we fought with in July 2006 were from Syria. They were from Syria. Not only in Lebanon, but also in the Gaza Strip. In the Gaza Strip, my dear brothers and sisters, the weapons which reached Gaza, the missiles which reached the Gaza Strip, and today I will speak with frankness. Israel today, it is afraid from the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip, for the first time in history, now has forces 1.5 million settlers to go down to the bomb shelters. Israel fears about Tel Aviv. It fears that the Gaza could target Tel Aviv, and it should be afraid. These missiles, how did they reach Gaza? From where did they reach Gaza? Did they reach Gaza by the Saudi regime? Did the Saudi regime make them reach Gaza? Did the Egyptian regime send them to Gaza? Did the Arab regimes send them? No. These missiles, they are from Syria, and they arrived by Syria. This Syria, this Syrian leadership, over the past years, it was putting its interest in danger, putting its regime in danger, putting its existence in danger for the sake of resistance in Lebanon and the resistance in Palestine to be strong. Please, give me an example. Is any other Arab regime ready to take such a risk? All the Arab regimes know. What does it mean for the Americans to give arms to Hezbollah? This is on the list. Hezbollah is on the list of the terrorist organizations. What does it mean when you give weapons to Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Palestine, these two organizations which are also on the terrorist list? When the Arab regimes, when they prevented food and bread and even money some Gulf countries. In Saudi Arabia, they even prevented donations from reaching Gaza. When food was prevented from being sent to Gaza, Syria was sending weapons together with food to Gaza. And let all the people of Gaza know this. Let all the people of Gaza know this. Syria took a risk in doing this, yes. This is Syria. Syria of Bashar al-Assad. Syria of the martyrs. Dawood Rashha and Asif Shawkat and Hassan Turkmani. This is Syria. This is Syria which enabled the resistance in Lebanon and in Palestine to achieve victory. And those who say today that they care about Palestine and Lebanon and Syria, where were they before? They were with the enemy. They stood with America. They stood with Israel. They stood with the West. Why do we ignore these facts? Why? On this day, we must speak the truth. And whoever likes it or not, nobody must trick himself. Today in Syria, my dear brothers and sisters, today, from the beginning, there is an Israeli-American project which prevents, it says that it is forbidden to have strong armies in the region for the sake of Israel. It is not allowed to have strong armies in the region. It only accepts internal security services wearing the army uniform. In Lebanon, what is doing? Our army is for internal security, but it wears a military uniform. What is accepted in the regional countries is to have armies of internal security, responsible for internal security. However, if there are armies, their ammunition and their weapons and their training and their veins must be connected with the Americans. Why? Because then this army will do anything but fight Israel. This is the American plot. And look at the Arab armies. You can all see them. Why? When America occupied Iraq, and here let me ask a question. When the Americans entered Iraq, what did they do? They dismantled the Iraqi army. Why? Isn't it possible for them to manage the Iraqi army? No, the army can answer to any political authority. The Iraqi army could have answered to the new political authority. This army, which unfortunately fought Iran for 8 years and invaded Kuwait and also threatened neighboring countries and confronted the Shia in Iraq and the Kurds in Iraq and the Sunnis in Iraq. But regardless, this army was dismantled. Why? Because they don't want a strong army, an army whose weapons and training and mind is not connected with the Americans. This army, Iraqi army, was trained by the Russians, was provided with weapons from the Russians, meaning it's connected to Russia. So the Iraqi army disappeared. What do we have in Iraq now? Police. They are trying to form an army, but let's see what happens. What is accepted in the region, from America's perspective, is police. The independent Palestinian state, which they don't know how to accept, at the best, they'll accept police only in any possible Palestinian state. They won't accept an army. What remains of the armies? We have a strong ideological army whose weapons and ammunition and tactics is not connected with the Americans. There's only one army left who is not connected with the Americans. It's the Syrian army, that's all. Isn't this the truth? This is the truth. And so, after the July war, they are working on destroying this army. They are working on destroying this army in any way whatsoever. Yes, what happened here is that America and the West and their tools in the Arab world, they took advantage, and I'll be very clear and precise, they took advantage of legitimate demands of the Syrian people. And the Syrian president recognized that these are legitimate demands, demands regarding reforms and democracy, etc., etc. And then they put Syria into a war. They prevented dialogue in Syria. The Syrian opposition, even the nationalist Syrian opposition, is forbidden to hold dialogue. work, because what is required in Syria is not reforms. It's required to destroy Syria, to destroy its army, to destroy its people, to divide it, to rip it apart. Just like Iraq, were it not for the resistance in Iraq and the political perseverance, were it not for this, you would have seen Iraq in a much more difficult situation. So this is what is going on today. And it's the right. Israel is entitled today to be happy and to rejoice. Yes, Israel is happy today. It's rejoicing because there are very important figures in the Syrian army today who were targeted and killed. And so for this reason, these are the Israeli aspirations. They don't want Syria to have a strong army, an army of ideology. They want Syria only to have a police force. We call once again to preserve Syria, to preserve its people. We love these people. We call for preserving the Syrian army, which we appreciate. And the only solution is to accept dialogue, to quickly go towards dialogue. Yes, today, this army and these army commanders, these martyrs, we owe it a lot to them because of their assistance to the resistance movements in Lebanon, Palestine and the region. We miss them, and we express to the Syrian leadership and to the Syrian army and to the Syrian people and also to the families of the martyrs, we would like to express our sorrow and our condolences, and we denounce this targeting because this only serves the interests of the enemy. And these leaders today, these martyrs, they supported the resistance fighters and they also provided us with weapons. We express our condolences, we celebrate their martyrdom, and we find it unfortunate that they have left us, but because they are our companions in arms and in our history of confronting the Israeli enemy for tens of years. However, anyway, we are confident that this army, this Syrian Arab ideological army, this army which put up with so much difficulty, this army has the determination and the capability which enables it to continue, and it also has loyal leaders and national leaders. It has leaders which enable it to overthrow and overcome all of the aspirations of the enemies. And so they are continuing with Syria. And the issue today in Syria is just as I said in the previous speeches. I said when they refer to sedition, sedition has right and wrong, the truth and also the lies. Let's look very clear. Some people don't see all angles. We are raising our voices for the sake of whom? We are fighting for the sake of who? We are quickly going and looking for a certain means for the sake of who? Let's put a stop to this anger. Let's put a stop to these hasty reactions and let's think, what is going on in Syria? Who is benefiting from what is going on in Syria? Yesterday, Clinton arrived to the region. She visited Egypt and she also met with the Israeli officials. Did she ask anything about the Palestinians? No. Palestine has no place. The whole issue, she used a very, very clear term. As analysts, we should focus on it. She spoke about a period of uncertainty. Where is Egypt headed towards? Nobody knows. Clinton, she came to reassure the Israelis regarding the Egyptian stance, and she came to tell the Egyptians, we are with you and we support you, we will do anything you want, we are at your service, even if you are an Islamic government. However, what is most important of all is peace with Israel. Clinton came for the sake of Israel, not for the sake of Egypt, nor for the sake of the Egyptian people, nor for the sake of Palestine. And now, the Americans today, are they crying because of those who are being killed in Syria, the Syrian generals and officers and soldiers and civilians from both sides? Or aren't they toasting and celebrating because of the blood being spilt in Syria? Doesn't this require us to look at this situation from a different angle? And also, when we speak about Iran, I'll be brief here. also they realize the central role of Iran in the axis of resistance, so they went ahead to target Iran. Iran is always being targeted, but after 2006, and I read Israeli studies which said if you want to get rid of Hezbollah and Hamas and Islamic Jihad and the Palestinian resistance factions and the Lebanese resistance factions and Syria, look at Iran. Go after Iran. If you get rid of Iran, you get rid of all the others. And so, for this reason, you see Israel, its concern over the past years is who? America comes and it sells $60 billion and $100 billion worth of weapons to Arab countries, and Israel doesn't make any protest. However, it focuses on Iran, isolating Iran, pressuring Iran, imposing sanctions on Iran, assassinating nuclear scientists, assassinating military officials, assassinating members of parliament, bombings, just as we have in the Arab world. Tens of Farsi satellite media outlets which are working on inciting the Iranian people against the Iranian leadership and against the Iranian stance. And they say because of Iran's stance towards Palestine and Iran's stance because of the people of the region, you are paying the price with your bread, with your food, with your electricity, with your university degrees. And so for this reason, they encourage protests in Iran on Al-Quds Day. Of course, Imam Khomeini wanted Al-Quds Day to be an international day, not just an Iranian day to support Al-Quds. But some people go ahead and say, not Gaza, not Lebanon. My spirit, my soul is to sacrifice Iran. This was said in the streets of Iran. These Farsi satellite media outlets, which are similar to the Arab outlets, they said this. Today, let me say, with respect to the latest sanctions which were imposed by the Americans on Iran, everything which the Americans and the West can do, everything they can do, they've done. They've done everything they can do regarding the oil, regarding the banks, the isolation, the sanctions. However, Iran, as the Imam, the leader, Sayyid Khamenei, may God preserve him, as he said just days ago, Iran is stronger, 100 times stronger than it was 30 years ago. And Iran will increase in strength. If you isolate it, it will increase in strength. It relies on its God and on itself more. And Iran is a big country and a rich country, rich in its people and in its minds, its brains, and also rich in its material capabilities. What remains is the war. We welcome the war. Who will wage a war? Those who went ahead and weren't able to confront Hezbollah, will they wage a war? Those who left Iraq, are they able to wage war? We know how the Americans left Iraq. Will they wage a war? Can they wage a war? Those who are looking for Taliban in Afghanistan, will they wage a war? Okay, they make threats of launching a war. However, after all these decades have passed, it is our destiny and fate to live in a region of war and to be the men and the women and the children and elderly of war. This is no problem. Now, what remains is Gaza. And Gaza must be very careful of itself and of its choices. And of course, we appreciate the delicate situation and the delicate stance because of the situation in the region. Of course, however, at the end, regarding the regional situation, I tell the Palestinian factions and the Palestinian people, very honestly, I'd like to say, they know, I personally, as all of my brothers and sisters, we love the Palestinians. We love the Palestinian people. We love them. We support their victory. We stand with them. And we take this burden with you. I'd like to tell you, if the Palestinian cause is given back to the Arab regimes, and you've tried the Arab regimes for 60 years, if it's given back to the Arab regimes, Palestine has been lost forever. Today, there are difficult choices which must be made. There is an axis which stood in support of Palestine and paid a price for this, and this axis is being subject to very harsh and difficult attacks. The most harsh attack is using the sectarian card. And here, before, we speak about what's happening in the region before deciding the fate of the Syrian people and Lebanese people and Iraqi people and the Iranian people. It's the fate of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause. This is the biggest target. It will be most affected by the results. Regarding the Lebanese situation, first of all, in confronting all of the dangers and the foreign and internal threats here in Lebanon, there is a point of national consensus, or they allege that it's national consensus, regarding the army and also about strengthening the Lebanese army as an institution which guarantees civil peace and defends the country. In the defense strategy, we all say either the army by itself or the army with the resistance. However, the army is common. It is subject to national consensus. However, is there really national consensus? Is there a genuine national will in this regard? I doubt. What is really harming the army today? Before the tanks and before the weapons, we have the human being in the army, the individual, the mind, the spirit, the will of the army. What is harming the army, what is striking the army at its heart, is accusing the army of being sectarian, making sectarian threats and some infiltration into the army, and expressing doubts in the nationalism and neutrality of the army in the internal situation. Although the army has proven that it is now a nationalist army and that it is a neutral body as well, in the end, the Lebanese army officers, the high-ranking generals, the soldiers, they are the sons of this people. They have their sympathy, they have their affiliations and their points of view. They are not disconnected from what is going on. However, this army has proven over the past years that it is a nationalist army and a neutral army, and it represents a guarantee for civil peace. However, what the army is being subject to, the accusations against the Lebanese army leadership, accusations regarding the sectarianism of this army and the penetration, and accusing this army of working for this side or that side, this really threatens. It's the biggest threat for the army. And whoever wants a strong army must protect this army morally and politically, first of all. Before protecting it by money, you say we're giving the army money and we gave them weapons, but this doesn't create an army or protect an army. However, when we leave the army, when the first internal incident happens, or when the first incident happens with Israel, this will be a catastrophe, even in the Adesa incident. And I hope if this is proposed on the table of national dialogue, let's know really what happened, the official performance in the Adesi incident, and how much the state protected the army and covered the army. This is subject to argument. Yes, we want a strong Lebanese army. However, my dear Lebanese, and here to the Lebanese government, to the table of national dialogue, to all those who support the Lebanese army, if we want a strong army, we must have a strong will. What does this mean? It means that if we reach the stance where we are not afraid of the American ambassador or the American secretary or the assistant to the American secretary or the American president or the American general, and they came to us, and if we are not afraid of them, then we can create a strong army. However, if our army will continue to be provided with weapons from the Americans, continue to be trained by the Americans, continue to be protected by the Americans, if it remains as such, it will only be internal security services wearing military uniform, because the Americans won't give the Lebanese army arms to fight Israel. Even to the internal security, we gave you documents. Even the simple weapons they give, they try and prove, they investigate if it's being used against Israel or not. And they are very simple, moderate weapons. This story that we are afraid to give arms to the Lebanese army so these arms don't fall into the hands of Hezbollah, these are lies. We don't need arms from the Lebanese army. Give the Lebanese army weapons. Do you want guarantees? We'll give you guarantees. Give arms to the Lebanese army, and if we find these weapons in the street, we won't touch them. We don't need them. However, these are lies. That's not the real reason they don't give the army weapons. They don't want this Lebanese army to be strong. They don't want to give it weapons. So go ahead. At the table of national dialogue, the government cannot put up with this or not, but on the table of national dialogue, you will be all present. Propose to the government, okay, yes, today Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, is saying, go ahead, I want to give you these weapons. I want to give you these weapons. And I have a lot of proposals. I can sell you armor, I can sell you weapons with appropriate prices, without any red lines. I, Iran, I want Lebanon to be strong. I want the Lebanese army to be strong. Who in Lebanon, who can have the courage and take a decision to get grants, receive grants from Iran? When we have a strong national will, then we'll have a strong national army. However, if our will always be afraid from Connelly. Connelly is the American ambassador to Lebanon. When we're afraid of Clinton, when we're afraid of Condoleezza Rice or William Burns, then nothing will happen. Where will we get a strong army then? Prayers are not enough. Wishing is not enough. A strong army needs capabilities, weapons, training, it needs morale, it needs a political cover. This is what achieves for us a strong army. The second point regarding the internal situation in Lebanon is that today we have internal tension inside Lebanon for political reasons, for reasons related to daily life, for other reasons, many, many different reasons for this tension. The media outlets, of course, they are also increasing this. They are helping to further escalate the tension. Now, I'm not speaking about their rights as media outlets. However, there are certain responsibilities which the media outlets must take. Inside Lebanon, in the internal Lebanese situation, I call on you and I call on all those who are present, and especially the supporters of the resistance. I call for calm and patience. I also call for you to put up with all of this. You heard a lot of curses and you will hear a lot of curses in the future. No problem. Now, when experience proves that our blood and our children and our spirits are ready to sacrifice for the sake of the dignity of this country and the honor of this country and the stability of this country, then if we are insulted, there's no problem. Do not respond to any incitement or any provocation. There are some people who want to provoke you. There are some people who want to drag you into fighting or into confrontation. There are some people who want to bring about chaos in Lebanon and sedition in Lebanon. I said before regarding Iraq, they don't want to leave any rocks. They don't want to leave any humans with each other. And today in Syria, they don't want to leave any rocks or any humans. And the same goes for Lebanon. And that's their project for the whole region. Comprehensive chaos, blind chaos, and there are some who want to put Lebanon in a state of chaos. We are not one of those people who want Lebanon to be in a state of chaos, and we won't be. For this reason, I call for patience. Put up with this. I call for discipline. And whoever wants to speak, let him speak. Whoever wants to curse, let him curse. Whoever wants to lie, let him lie. Whoever wants to make allegations, make these allegations. We have these allegations. These allegations are paid for, these allegations which we hear. And this doesn't concern only the Shia and the Sunnis, Muslims and Christians as well. Amongst the Muslims, amongst the Christians, amongst the Shia themselves, amongst the Sunni themselves, amongst the Druze, amongst all sects, there are some who are trying to rip apart our community. Family conflicts, tribal conflicts, conflicts between different regions, conflicts between different parties, sectarian conflicts. As much as they do, they are working on this. This is not a coincidence, not because people are hot or because we have no electricity. No, this helps. But why? Why is the country in this state of tension? Because there are some who are paying money and using the media and provoking, and this operation is being managed. And so for this reason, we don't want to be part of it. We are committed to silence, the silence of the strong, the silence of the honorable, not the silence of the weak. Everybody knows we are not weak. Everybody knows that we are not cowards. However, we believe that the most important thing is the national interest, especially in the Sunni-Shia subject. And I'd like to further highlight this. I didn't want to speak about it, but when I found that in Egypt, some people in the parliament spoke about it, in Sudan, people spoke about it in Friday prayers, and in some Gulf countries, they spoke about it. So I'm obliged to speak about it. People go ahead, religious clerics or politicians, they, of course, show a certain toy, and they say, they tell the people, look, this toy, first of all, they say the Shia manufactured this toy, and Shia are selling this toy, and they're giving them to their children buy it, and this toy says, kill Aisha. If this was being said in Lebanon only, okay, but it's being said in Egypt and in Sudan, and in Gulf countries and on the internet, it's a long story. First of all, this sound, this talk in English, which is said by the toy, doesn't say kill Aisha. And if it does say kill Aisha, who says that the Shia manufactured this toy? Who said that the Shia sold this doll or this toy? Today, I heard here in South Lebanon, is there anybody who's selling this toy or this doll? No, nobody. But the news went ahead, it spread. Look at what the Shia are doing. This shows to the Israelis and the Americans how much we as Muslims, how much we can be tricked, how much we can be provoked, how much we can be in a state of loss. Now, what prevents the Israelis or the Western companies from manufacturing these toys, which really say kill Aisha, or kill Abu Bakr, or kill Ali, or kill this person, or this religious figure. And we, the Shia and Sunni, then we confront one another. We're not saying this to the Israelis. What we're saying to the Israelis, with this message we're sending by this, is that we don't have any minds, we don't think. We have weak thinking. Israel doesn't need to plan to bring about a sedition, because with a toy you can bring about sedition. And so we are called upon for more vigilance, more awareness. We must be more careful. And here I call for a decree. Let's have a document in Lebanon. Let's adopt a document in Lebanon. Today, the sectarian language has gone out of control. If anybody from a specific sect says something and then he's responded to by the person from the opposing sect, then we have tension. The national document says, let's begin with the Shia. If a Shia person, whether he be a religious figure or a politician or an intellectual or a journalist, if he says something which is insulting to any religion or any sect, then we, the Shia, the clerics, the Shia parties, the Shia intellectuals, we, the Shia, we will stand against him and silence him. And the same goes for someone from the Sunni sect. The Sunnis would confront him. And if someone from a Druze sect does this, the same thing happens. If someone from the Christian sect insults someone else, then the Christians must silence him. Can we go ahead and adopt such a document here in Lebanon? If we do, we will protect our country. And we, our people in the Amal movement, our colleagues amongst the Shia sect, we will all accept this. We propose such a charter, and we will be committed to it. I'm speaking about the Shia in Lebanon. Now, maybe someone in London who is working for the British intelligence, he doesn't concern me, but here in Lebanon. Now, anyone from the Shia in Lebanon, a media, an article, a journalist, a television outlet, a podium, a mosque, any Shia who insults the sanctities of the other religions or the peoples of the other religions or provokes from a sectarian angle, we the Shia must silence him. The same goes for the Sunnis and the Druze and the Christians if we want to protect our country. If we want to leave our country, we must take responsibility now and in the aftermath. The third point in the Lebanese internal situation, in the current majority, the Lebanese parliamentary majority, we have disagreements, and some people look at the bad aspects of these disagreements. However, there are some positive aspects in these disagreements, from our perspective at least. The positive aspect is that this shows it's a coalition government, not a government for Hezbollah. Yes, the March 14 movement, from day one, it said that it's a Hezbollah government, but the March 14 movement knows it's not a Hezbollah government. Why? Because it wants to hold Hezbollah responsible for all the repercussions. The March 14 movement knows, it knows the debt of Lebanon, and but the March 14 was responsible, very much responsible for this debt, and the March 14 is very much responsible for the corruption. It knows the legacy which was left to any government, government of Bekati or anyone else, and from the beginning, March 14 knows that there is no money, there is debt, there are problems, and so this government will confront problems, and this government won't be able to solve a lot of these problems. And so from day one, they said, this is Hezbollah's government. Why? To hold Hezbollah responsible for the repercussions. We accept this. We agree to take responsibility for all the repercussions and for this government to remain so that Lebanon remains stable, so that Lebanon remain stable regarding the policy of disassociation which this state has practiced. This is in the interest of Lebanon, the policy of disassociation. Now, in between brackets, you will find here some people who demand, for example, some people who demand for Hezbollah's disarmament against Israel and arm the opposition against Syria. You'll find some people who call for a neutral stance against Israel, but to take sides against Syria. This is in between brackets. This government is a coalition government just like any other coalition government in the world. It has different packs or different blocks, and there are disagreements amongst the components of this government. However, the most important thing is to solve our disagreements and our problems by dialogue and by discussions and deliberations. We in Hezbollah, we are committed. We are committed. Any disagreement with any component of this current government and any disagreement with any one of our allies, we don't make these disagreements public. We don't express our opinions in public. We don't express our reservations and criticism in public. And we don't respond to our allies' criticism in public. We prefer to hold dialogue as long as we are allies and partners. This is what we learned. And so, regarding what has happened and what is happening between all of the allies, we are sure that we have a strategic and good and honest relationship with all of our allies. And especially here, why should we name? Because over the past 2 weeks, some of those who curse us, they began to speak a lot in Hezbollah and the Free Patriotic Movement of Michel Aoun. From the beginning, we were silenced. However, listen to these two sentences which I want to say. We in Hezbollah, we assure that we respect and we appreciate and we assure that we have a strategic relationship with Michel Aoun, and we also have a strategic relationship with all of the companions and the individuals and the members and supporters of the Free Patriotic Movement of Michel Aoun. We stress that this alliance is a strategic alliance, and what is between us and what we were able to achieve over the past 6 years in the very difficult periods, in the very difficult days when we were confronting internal and foreign challenges, this alliance cannot be broken by a disagreement regarding a certain issue related to daily life or related to daily politics. Allies disagree. When we say allies, it means we are two parties. Hezbollah has not become the Free Patriotic Movement, nor has the Free Patriotic Movement become Hezbollah, just as they accuse Michel Aoun. Michel Aoun is Michel Aoun, the Patriotic Movement is a Free Patriotic Movement, and Hezbollah is Hezbollah. Just the same goes for any other movement in this majority. And nobody has become part of anyone else or counseled for the sake of anyone else. We all have our convictions, we all have our points of view. What we agree upon, we work on together. What we disagree on, we hold dialogue about. We try and put an to our disagreements. This is the real relationship, the right relationship between two allies. The Free Patriotic Movement cannot be part of Hezbollah. And also, I told the members of the Free Patriotic Movement, Hezbollah cannot be part of this movement. We have a Free Patriotic Movement which has its leadership and its direction and its own policy, and Hezbollah also has its own separate approach, and we have an alliance. From our perspective, in order not to speak about wins and losses, I, together with my brothers, we view that the stance of Michel Aoun and the Free Patriotic Movement, because this is subject to debate today, and we view the stance of all our allies in Lebanon, we view their stances in the July war as a moral, ethical, humanitarian stance, first and foremost, far away from politics and far away from wins and losses. This is the truth. And we evaluate our relationship based upon this. We hope, God willing, that the members of the current parliamentary majority will be able to hold dialogue and to discuss the issues and reach understandings and not to allow disagreements to take us too far, because this will not serve Lebanon, nor will it serve the people of Lebanon or the interests of Lebanon at all. On this great day, I once again would like to greet our martyrs, all of the leaders of the martyrs, all of those who walked on this path. And I would like to greet and salute once again the Imam of the resistance and the martyrs, Imam Musa Sadr. I once again salute all of the resistance fighters, the Mujahideen, all the honorable people in all of the resistance factions. We salute the officers and the soldiers and the commanders of the Lebanese army, which stood in the July 2006 war with perseverance. We salute all of the parties, all sides, which supported every individual in Lebanon, who showed perseverance, who sacrificed, who were displaced, who welcomed people into their homes. And we pledge to all of you, I won't name, because I might forget some people's names, and this is inappropriate and rude, so I won't mention names. I thank all those who stood and participated and made this achievement possible, and I say what you achieved will remain immortal in Lebanon and in history and in the Ummah. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, that was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement, speaking there live in Beirut, speaking on the sixth anniversary of the July 2006 war, in which Hezbollah and its fighters defeated Israel and its forces. Speaking there, roughly covering 8 points, he spoke about, firstly, about the war itself, that's saying that Israel is still reeling from that war, and that since that war, Israel and the United States have tried very hard to dismantle the resistance altogether. He also spoke about Syria and saying that Israel and its supporters see Syria as a problem, considering Syria has a very strong army. He also spoke about the fact that everything that can be done against Iran is being done at this point. He also spoke about Gaza, and he said that he understood the delicacy of the regional situation and how the resistance must act during this time. He said that Hezbollah stands with the Palestinian people and their resistance, and he said that if the Palestinian cause was to be given back to the Arab regimes, that Palestine would be lost forever. He said difficult choices will need to be made by the resistance, as an axis that stood with Palestine is being targeted right now through sectarian cards. Then he spoke about 3 internal issues in Lebanon, saying that the army is being accused of being sectarian, though the army is in fact nationalist, and the United States is funding militarily and through arms that army. He said that that will of course not be a good thing, because the army needs to decide where it stands at this point. The army and the people need to have a strong will to be able to stand and to make their army strong on their own. He spoke about a second point, saying that there are tensions related to daily life in Lebanon. He said that though Hezbollah has been accused of many things in the media, that Hezbollah has not responded, and he encouraged his followers and supporters not to respond to any incitements. He also spoke about the Shia Sunni issue, saying that these many lies are being spread and they're being used as propaganda to divide Muslims. He said that the fact that many Muslims fall for this shows to the U.S. and Israel how quickly and easily us Muslims can be tricked and used by the media. And he also finally there spoke about a third point, saying that some disagreements do exist within the majority in Lebanon at this point. But he said that is natural, as it is a coalition government and each of these parties is separate. Hezbollah is not the Free Patriotic Movement and vice versa. And he said that this government was naturally going to face many issues such as financial problems, etc. And he said that this government, though, has taken responsibility to make Lebanon stable, and that they will do so through dialogue, etc. Well, again, that was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah there speaking on the sixth anniversary of the July 2006 war between Hezbollah and Israel. We will, of course, have subsequent analysis on that coming up in about a half hour's time with the World News in full. Stay with Press TV.